Hey, everybody. Welcome to Bob Saget's Here For You. I am here for you. And I'm Bob Saget. What? How could I say my name? That's so upsetting. You know, when someone says, say my name. And then my wife says, Bob Saget. I go, oh, God, don't say my name. I can't take my own name ever since the Tourette's guy went, Bob Saget, which is a real disorder. But the guy did it on all over the internet. I hope he's alive. Anyway, I hope you're doing okay. Happy New Year. Here we are. We made it. We made it into 2021. And wow, I don't know what's happening today when this episode is coming out, but I know there's some crazy shit happening. So we have someone as my guest, Josh Gad, who is such a good person and so talented and wonderful. And so he's here to bring just some positivity and joy. That's the idea. I hope you had a good holidays. I hope you had a really wonderful Christmas and Hanukkah and New Year's Eve and didn't have to eat too many cheeseburgers the next day. And here we are into the 2021. And thank God 2020 is over. We're still not out of all the crap yet, but we will be. We will be. I'm telling you, because what other choice do we have? We have to think positive and move forward, no matter what your belief system, and somehow come together right now over me. Anyway, do what you do with this podcast. You know, you subscribe and then you listen to it, or you follow if that's where you do it. And you do, you can go to the YouTube page and watch a Zoom split screen at youtube.com/Bob Saget. Bob Saget. And I'm just really happy to have this guest today. Oh, the other thing is, I sometimes call you guys, so look at that phone number up there. You can leave a message, and I'll come up with subject matter and ask you on Twitter or Instagram stories to give a call and leave a message, and then I will call you on selected days. I've got some great shows coming up with some wonderful people. One of my favorite people, I always say that, but it's not bad to love a couple hundred people that you feel like you know them, or maybe I don't know them well. This gentleman, I don't know that well, but I feel like I do because that's how he makes you feel. I first saw him in Book of Mormon with Andrew Reynolds, where he was just unbelievably a force to be reckoned with. I have loved everything he's done, literally. Frozen and Beauty and the Beast. He's a voiceover king. He's got a series with Hugh Laurie. He's got Central Park, an adult animated show. He's going to be with Rick Moranis in the Shrunk movie, which is something we've all been needing and wanting to see, some good comedy and heartfelt love by getting shrunken. And he's just super wonderful. So let me admit him in right now. Here comes Mr. Josh Gad.
All right, and we are recording on my end.
Oh, and your end. You always talk about it because you're...
I do. I like to just let you know how all my body parts are working right now.
I have a full body scan thing in the house that I could lay you down in, and I could scan everything. And I don't know what I'll be looking at, but I can see through you.
I don't know if it's necessary. I mean, I appreciate the offer. I certainly do. But I hear you. I tend to like to get body scans in a facility with trained medical experts.
I got it. You know, this is the first time where the first rule of improv was wrong. Because right. You would have gone, yes.
That's right. This is no and no thank you.
Yes, yeah. And I want you to scan me and I want you to do an internal. I don't care if you're a doctor. I trust you.
Yeah, you're probably right. I could have gone the yes and route, but I also don't know you well enough to know if that will end with me actually being at your house under really questionable care.
Right, and I've got what I think is a vaccine that I would try on you.
Which I don't want.
No, I agree. We want to really
I want a vaccine. I don't know that I want Bob Saget's vaccine.
I don't
even know if it's for COVID. I just think you know, it could just be any sort of vaccine.
It's a multivitamin type thing.
Okay, great.
And it has a little bit of bat juice in it. So we have just gone through New Year's. That's what's just happened.
Okay, got it.
And so we don't know what can happen, what has happened even 2 hours ago. We don't know what has happened because that's the world we've been living
in. So should we record one where we're in civil war and one where we're not in civil war?
That's a really good idea. But this is just a short time before the civil war or not civil war.
Yeah.
This is just a couple weeks because neither of us wanted to, violate our holiday time with our families.
That's right.
And it's very gracious of you to be on here.
Thank you.
And I adore you.
It's not gracious, and I'll tell you why. My kids don't usually get excited about me doing podcasts, mostly because they don't know what a podcast is. But they were particularly excited when Daddy told them he was sitting down with you today because when I tell you they are unhealthily obsessed with Full House, it still doesn't do enough justice to their obsession with the show. And also similarly, my obsession with the show, revisiting it after I first watched it every day after school.
You're the one.
I'm one of many. You defined a generation, Bob, and it
was
mine.
Well, you know what? I was being a comic that was, and an actor that was more irreverent, was trying to push the envelope. Thought I was, and then I got the part and I was lucky. I just had a kid. I got fired from another show in New York and I got it. And then 8 years, and your resume, I have to do my work just cause I like to know what I'm going to say. It's you work every minute. So when you get canceled, it's just because you got three other offers. You're very,
That's not true.
Well, I had a bunch of shows that would go one season. I would do one season and out. And you did that great show with Billy Crystal that I love.
That's the one that got away. That really is. The others.
I knew.
The Comedians was tough because that was one that was just really starting to crackle. And it just it didn't find its audience. But it's funny because people now are finding it on Hulu and discovering it for the first time and loving it. But, but similarly, I'm not going to stop gushing before you start gushing, because I have to say that what's remarkable about Full House and revisiting it again, and what's remarkable about your performance in that show is it really is, it's wholesome without being corny. It's so wonderfully sincere that at a time when we're all dealing with the hell escape that is the world right now.
Yeah, it's pure cynicism. If you put out a John Lennon message of peace, love, or Elvis Costello's cynical peace, love, and understanding, people go, that's bullshit. I don't want to hear that.
It's true. And Full House somehow, it sort of rises above that cynicism. And it is such a reminder of what that kind of sitcom can be. And it's just, you're so good in it. And thank you all over again for not only being such a big part of my life, but now my own daughter's lives as well.
Well, it's really sweet. And I hear it a lot. And what we didn't know when we were making it was that it would never go off the air ever.
Right.
And it's like what the Brady Bunch was, this is because of everything that's happened. I mean, we had no internet when we were making that. I had dial up AOL.
It's the funniest. We just watched an episode last night where Jesse's getting his first computer.
Yeah.
And I'm laughing to the kid because the kids don't understand how there's like no computers back then. And they
look
so different.
You got to back it up. You were watching Full House last night?
Yes. This isn't me doing fan service. This is literally the reward in our house for the kids doing. Having a great day at school is being able to watch episodes of Full House. I swear to God. That is 100% true.
Well, I have to gush a little bit because when I meet, I am both a person who loves irreverent comedy, as you are.
Right.
We'll get to Book of Mormon, which is, for me, definably one of the funniest plays ever done. I mean, the producers has many great ones. But that damn show, and I saw you in New York, and I saw you in L.A., and And but who you are is are the kind of people that I'm drawn to, especially now, which is people that aren't afraid to be pure and want to help people. And so many people, and I'm sure you get it too, they gang up and they go, oh, Hollywood elite. Sure, you can say that. You have right. some money. And it's like, no, I would be saying this when I lived in a single apartment in Palms.
That's
I
right.
said it. I was raised to care about people. I was raised not to look at their political party, but see what kind of person they were. But we're so many light years from that. And that was a kinder, gentler time. When
it's true, but I haven't given up on us yet. I feel
right. Me either.
I feel like, look, I feel like we're definitely at a low point right now in terms of our ability to hear others.
I'm sorry, what? I was so stupid. I'm sorry.
That was such a dad joke, and I know it because I'm now telling those jokes.
Yeah.
And my wife's calling me out on it, and it's really upsetting because I'm like, oh, I've become the dad.
You seen my merch? I don't appear on the shows.
Do you have a deal with Jimmy?
No, I write away to the stores, the NBC store, so I can show it on my podcast.
Got it.
I know, actually, I enjoy all the shows I go on, so I will pack this from New York and bring the cup home when
they
give
me
the basket.
I have all the merch. I'm wearing Jimmy Kimmel Live underwear right now.
Oh, I've got everything. I have his full line of clothing. I have everything. I've got a tube top on.
I have his toupees. There's a Jimmy Kimmel toupee line that I really
I use the same hairspray that has that Giuliani black paint in it. I don't want people right now to think that they're just watching two lefties talking, because I've got fans all over the place, okay? And I do stand up all over this country and all over different places in the world, and I love people, and I love positive people.
Amen.
And if people are feeling hurt and robbed, I get it. I don't get all of it because I don't like mean people. So that's, I think, what's been happening is people have gotten really cruel, and they're sick of hearing that. So you say that, and they go, well, screw you. But what I love about you is your spirit is just who you are. There was no way anything was going to stop you from who you were. How did you get this positive attitude to be who you are?
You know, I don't know. I
Hollywood, Florida?
I grew up in Hollywood, Florida.
I played the diplomat.
Oh, God, the diplomat.
I played it.
Is that bad boy still around, the
it
diplomat?
It is. They
hotel?
Rebuilt it into a beautiful partying place. But
yeah, same with Fountain Blue. Blue, diplomat, they all were a big part of the Miami scene, Fort Lauderdale scene when I was growing up. And I was born and raised in South Florida, and sort of the cliche upbringing of a lot of comedian actors. But my parents got divorced when I was 5 or 6. It's probably why I related to Full House so much, is single parent really right. resonated in my household. And, you know, it was one of those things where I was blessed to have an amazing figure in my life in the form of my mom, who really raised me and my two brothers right. And she was absolutely hell-bent on making sure that we as individuals were presenting ourselves as the best versions of ourselves possible. And by virtue of the fact that she instilled us with these incredible values, and because of the trauma of sort of, her divorcing my father because of some really bad decisions on his part,
only think it had to do with his penis, but I don't want to talk about your family.
Yeah, no. It was
my father's penis was so small. How small was it? It was so small that he didn't cheat on my mother. My dad's penis was so small, when he was sewing, he used it as a thimble. My dad's penis was so small, if you opened up a bottle of Merlot, he could be the cork.
So you've read my dad's book.
I know all about, How to Leave Your Family in 10 Easy Steps.
Yeah.
Are things any better now? I don't want to turn this into a personal, I hate the TMZ world we're in, but I hate the word celebrity. I mean, I don't know what that is. I mean, it's just, you're an actor, you're a writer, you're a producer, you're a talented man.
Thank you.
But But are things okay with your dad now?
Yeah, you know, it's we don't have much of a ongoing talking relationship. I love him because he's my dad. I happen
That's
to have
an you're a good person. Some people well, would be hurt and wouldn't be able to do that.
It's tough because I have the ability to look at his choices and say to myself, I don't ever want to follow in his footsteps. Also had an amazing father figure in my stepdad. So that really helped. But it comes back to my mom. I mean, my mom is right. just a badass. She's just outstanding. And she's so unbelievably caring and giving and selfless. So I think that's why I didn't end up being a real piece of shit, Bob.
You couldn't have been one. You're a positive. You were a positive person at birth, according to different scientific rulings. Pre-birth, I just don't know. I think life begins upon ejaculation.
I know that to be true based on experience.
Yeah. When I was single, I had jars and jars of life.
I had socks and socks full of life, and I can relate to it. Yeah,
you have to put something in there, like meatloaf.
Yeah. So, but meatloaf feels a little aggressive, and also a little unsanitary, right?
Like, well, not if you really get that clean grain, you know, grass fed.
Yeah, you want to get like, you want to go to a kosher butcher, get like some real good quality
kosher
meatloaf.
Butcher, and then you don't eat meat. But you'll have sex with it.
Yes. Still qualifies as vegan, I think. But, you know.
Yeah, you're a vegan, but your penis made its choice.
Yes. I didn't wake up thinking this was going to be the conversation.
I didn't either.
Or part of a conversation I had didn't either. Today, I'm glad we arrived here.
But see, this is what I do when I get delighted to see and talk to somebody that I like. I become the 9-year-old. I'll say the things that I would say to you backstage that you would go, why did you say that? What is wrong with you?
Bob, what the Right? Can I use the F-bomb on this? What?
Yeah, this is it's my podcast. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, sometimes I don't, depending on who I'm talking to.
Well, then I'm not going to.
No, you can. I'm
but,
fine.
But now that you said sometimes I don't, I want to be part of the sometimes.
Yeah. I want to
dare myself to not drop an F-bomb today.
Okay. So who's the first person you fucked? No, don't. I didn't. Don't answer. Don't answer. I just wanted to prove that you can do an F-bomb. I got to dig out of this hole because I'm talking about how wonderful you are. And you started working when you were 39. So you started working when you were how old? Like 16, 18?
Professionally?
When did you get a shirt? I mean, I'm looking at your thing. It looks like... I mean, you got
professionally,
so many things.
I didn't start. It was funny because my mom
There's
said
too many
to me,
credits here. It looks like a freaking phone book.
Oh, it's up. Most of them are bad.
But no, they're not. My Mary mom and said, Joe, 2002.
Oh, God, that's rough. That's a rough one.
Mary and Joe. Is that the very first, 2002?
Yeah, that was. I did that. I was going to school at Carnegie Mellon, and it was a student film. And that was my very first credit. And the truth was I wanted to act professionally from a very young age. And my mother, God bless her, said, no, you have to get an education. You have to get a formal education. And I was like, okay. And then I went to school and Josh Groban, my first year, he left freshman year to go pursue a career as Josh Groban. And
are you friends with Josh now?
I am friends with Josh.
I'm friends with Josh. I love him so much.
He's one of the greatest human beings alive.
He is another sweet. See, that's if just everybody had that in them to be a good person,
the world would be a calmer place.
It wouldn't be real. It wouldn't be right. You wouldn't be able to have. You wouldn't be who you were if it wasn't for your dad, you know, and your stepdad.
Yeah.
But it's why you look at your kids. And I know this, I have three daughters and I go, what did my parents do? Greatest. My parents, I don't talk to them anymore because they passed away. But
that tracks.
Well, I still talk to one of them. I had my dad stuffed, but was his humor, by the way, not mine. My dad would say about his brother-in-law, who he did not like, that he should have him stuffed and put him as a hat rack when you walk in. So... But so okay, so back to this Carnegie Mellon. You did a student
film. So went to
film.
Carnegie Mellon, begged my parents after Josh left. I was like, well, he got to do it, and they said, well, that's great for him. You're going to graduate, and when you have a degree, you can go do whatever you want to do. And I was resentful of that at first. And then I'm really grateful for it because I do think I wasn't ready. And I do think it would have robbed me of an experience that that really defined sort of my trajectory. And then my first real break was I did an episode of ER.
Yeah. And who was the cast then?
Oh, man, that was LaSalle was on the show. This was after Clooney was already gone. It was, I think Anthony was still on the show.
Was Noah Wiley on it?
I don't know if Noah was still on the show.
It wasn't Stamos yet.
No, he was not.
I'm looking here. Yeah, 2005. Yeah, he was still busy with me.
Yeah, so I...
No, he wasn't. We were busy as humans. No, I'm 10 years off.
Yeah, because you guys stopped what year?
95.
Right.
I'm 10 years off.
You'll
see. You'll see what happens when you get older. My mind's good. 10 years. I don't understand.
It's just a decade. It's a decade. It's no
yeah, whatever.
So I that was my first big break. And I was just kind of like stumbling from thing to thing, not really satisfied. And then
did you always think like I would that you were never going to work again after you would do something?
Yes. I almost went to law school. I was about 3 years out of school, two and a half years out of school, and I was just pissed, like with all the rejection. I was just bummed. And I met my then girlfriend, now wife, and was like, you know, why don't I just like do that thing where you become responsible and make money and become a father and care for a family? And my mother said to me, when I called her up and told her this, thinking my Jewish mother's going to be so happy that I'm going to law school, she was so pissed. And she was like, I'm disappointed in you. And I said, why? She goes, you've spent 15 years dreaming of doing this thing and only 2 years trying to execute that dream. I think that that's a cop out.
I love your mother.
She's the greatest. And about a month later, I auditioned and got the role one of the leads in the show, 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And that
saw at the Second Stage Theater because I followed it.
That was Dan Fogler, who was
well
genius.
Aware. I know it wasn't you. You were at the Circle and Square.
I was Circle and Square. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember all of it. And I did a play called Privilege by Paul Weitz in the Second Stage. So I had to watch while I rehearsed. At night I would watch the Spelling Bee because that was my theater. And then as they were leaving, went in there and did that play. But Spelling Bee was amazing. And I know that you had that amazing part.
It was such an amazing part. And that was all Fogler really was the genesis of that and was so incredible. And, you know, it was a challenging thing to step into somebody else's shoes and try to do justice to a role that was so brilliantly created.
I did that a couple times. I did Drowsy Chaperone.
Were phenomenal in Drowsy Chaperone. I saw you in Drowsy Chaperone.
You saw me in it?
Yes, I saw you in Drowsy Chaperone. You were outstanding.
Okay, we have quarantine rules, but I'm coming over.
Outstanding.
You need a back massage? I have that gun.
All of the above.
Okay.
Even if you've got COVID hands, you can just come over.
I'm so clean. I got a positive, checkup.
That was not what I wanted to hear.
I got COVID. I got it. I ate a bat.
But it's good. If you're positive about the positive, then I guess it sort of makes it a negative. So that's good.
Exactly. My blood is B positive.
Yeah.
You know, there are diseases you don't want to hear positive. I think any of them. But Drowsy Chaperone was Bob Martin, who's a genius.
He's brilliant. Didn't he write Prom too?
I don't know, but probably.
Yeah, he's great.
He's writing something else right now. He is so. And
you worked with Casey Nicola,
who directed me in that. And that's another connection that we have. Is one of the sweetest, most amazing people. And what a talented, just on the spot,
beyond
in the moment director. Says, do this. And then I was, you program it because it's right. when something's right, you just do it and you move your foot to the left. And then it's like, wow, that opened. That's all I did. That changed.
That show was so good for people who'd never got a chance to see that show.
I wish it would come back. Kevin McCollum's a dear friend and he produced it. Oh, he also put me in Hand to God. So I could, just brought up stepping into parts. I stepped into the shoes of Bob Martin and Mark Kudish in Hand to God, who also was that play, but I played a Lutheran minister, which had the kind of comedy that Book of Mormon had.
I never saw Hand to God. I heard such incredible things about Hand to God.
It was right in your wheelhouse.
And I know
you have a wheelhouse.
It. I do. I have a wheel mansion.
Is it wheel?
It's just a giant wheel that I live in and that I make decisions.
Do you have Lilliputians running around?
I do. They're called my children. Are they that tiny? They're very teeny. We're talking inches, not feet. And they're lovely.
I always do that. I can't go from kids to inches. Let me ask you this thing. You had ER. There's a bunch of shows you did. Would you say the definable thing was Book of Mormon? Was that for it?
Sure. I was very unsatisfied creatively. Like I was sort of going from thing to thing, and I was just like, I did a season, one of the many canceled seasons of television I did, of a show called Back to You, with the guys who would go on to create Modern Family, Stephen Crist, Kelsey Grammer, Patricia Heaton, Fred Willard, Ty Burrell. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, this thing's going to run for ages. And it's canceled the day of my wedding.
Welcome to showbiz.
Yeah. I was like, oof, this is during the writer's strike of 2009. And
that was well-timed too, because that made reality television the biggest thing in the world.
That's right. That's right.
That changed TV forever.
Forever. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's still, at least network TV never recovered. And it was just surreal. And I was sort of like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing with my life. And I got a call to go do a workshop of this show. And I remember I got a call from Bobby Lopez, who wrote the music with Trey Amett. And he's like, we're doing this show with the creators of South Park. It's called Book of Mormon. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is like that Mormon episode they did on South Park.
Right.
Right. And so I'm like, oh, they want me to play Cartman or something, like a theater version. Right. So I go to New York. We do this.
Had they seen you? How did they think of you? Was it from Spelling Bee?
Well, it was from Spelling Bee. But, Bob, they heard this album of this Christmas recording that the cast of Spelling Bee did. And vocally, they were really, really impressed with my voice, they said. And I was just very honored. It wasn't until after the fact that they told me that they thought my voice was somebody else's when they listened to that album. So they mistakenly gave this guy Barrett Fuller. They thought that I was him, which is why they
cast me. When you showed up and you had more of a tenor range,
like,
I would have.
What is this Kermit the Frog like sound coming out of this guy's voice? This is not, his voice has definitely changed. So I did this first read through, and I remember getting to the song Hasidiga Ibawai, and I was white knuckling it because I was terrified. It's one thing to do what they do on South Park, but it's another to do this sort of very aggressive comedy in front of an audience.
Right.
And I remember thinking to myself, okay, this is going to tell us whether or not this is even viable. And that very first audience gasped. And then they just let themselves go, and you could see the collective assholes loosening up in the small theater.
It's a miracle what it is.
And they went with it, and we never looked back. And it was a miracle, because it was just sort of like, this shouldn't work. There's no reason this could work. And even when we opened on Broadway, there were a lot of people betting against us, and they were just like, there's no audience for this. The people who would see this don't go to theater. And the theater goers are never going to see it because it's too controversial. And that was just sort of like what everybody bet against us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did our first preview, and it was almost like this overnight thing where it suddenly exploded. And unlike the producers, which came with such loaded expectations,
right,
we had the opposite sort of thing, which was we were coming out of nowhere.
Well,
so it was surreal.
Nowhere, I'm going to take a quick break and wait till you see how quick it is, because it's going to be something that has to do probably with either grooming or sleeping or mm-hmm. or finances. So,
that last one really intrigues me.
I like to groom while I spend money.
So. I like to sleep while I spend money. I like to be groomed while I sleep, and I like to pay for it.
I do spend money while I sleep.
Yeah.
I think we all do. Okay, we'll be right back. Okay, we're back.
That was really quick.
Well, you know, you just leave a little 30 frames on either side and you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I got to talk to you about Book of Mormon. That's why I want to take a break, because it was a miracle to me. I didn't meet you then. We talked at the LA performance. After you guys,
I wasn't in the LA performance. You'd probably
you did an LA performance that Norman Lear was at and Casey was at, and it was a really short thing.
I did.
It was you and Andrew. Yeah.
Oh, but not the show.
No, wait a minute. Where was I? Was I in New York again?
You may have seen me at the.
Where do you remember meeting me at? You did Book of Mormon, and then you came out into the house, and Casey was there. I thought it was in L.A. But do you remember meeting me after?
I remember meeting you, but I thought I met you in New York. We definitely met.
It was the night Norman Lear was there, and he was behind me, and it was the second time I'd seen the show.
Norman Lear was always there. Norman Lear saw the show more than I did.
Well, Norman Lear, he's a friend of mine, doesn't know that he has a credit on South Park, because Matt and Trey sat with, he said, all I did was talk to him for 3 days. I said, well, you have a credit. I saw the show, and I don't know if it was an old episode or what, but you have a credit. He goes, yeah. Jesus, I didn't know
that. They love Norman.
He is one of the best. Do you know him?
You know, only because he was such a big Book of Mormon fan, and I don't know him well. I love him so much. I actually just did a reading of Princess Bride, which he also
saw it.
Was credited
it was wonderful.
With.
Yep.
Thank you.
He was
also
a producer.
That.
He produced it.
Yeah.
Because Rob is Carl's son, and he was also instrumental he funded Spinal Tap. Lear has had his hands.
Isn't that insane? He's
Mount Rushmore. He's one
and
of the
98?
98. And we did a Zoom the other night with the guys, all the musicians, called Cigar Night, and we do it. CBS this morning is doing a whole feature on him, because his son-in-law is John LaPook, the CBS medical correspondent. And he won't let us see Norman, but I don't want to do anything to Norman at 98. But we smoke cigars and we hang out and we talk
about
it.
Please give him my love.
He loves you. He loves goodness. And that gets back to why Book of Mormon was so perfect. Because Matt and Trey have done what you do and what I aspire to do, which is, you can say the worst things in the world, but if your heart is pure, if you really are coming, think about the miracle of Christmas, that 15-minute VHS that went out, that George Clooney circulated, and I was in my office in Santa Monica. I popped this in, and I go, oh, my God, these guys are geniuses. How did they do this? And Jesus is in it, and of course, a reoccurring character in South Park.
Yep.
And they take the darkest theme. South Park movie was perfection.
It was a masterpiece. Stephen Sondheim, actually, when that movie came out, said it was the best musical of the decade. And there really is something about Trey and Matt where they just know how to do satire in a way that is so profound, so filthy, but also so unbelievably filled with pathos. Like... Yeah. Especially Book of Mormon. What's so crazy about that show is you'd be amazed at how many people left and would write us letters or come to the stage door and tell us, you know, I actually converted to Latter-day Saints because of the show. And it's in many ways, there's something about the sort of like uplifting ending that I think makes the show, a lot of critics would say, well, it's completely anti-faith, obviously, but it's really not. It's actually very much a celebration of finding peace in some form of faith, even if it doesn't conform with a lot of, you know, what we might call the realities of life. There's Arnold is a liar, but he's created a lie that's so gorgeous and so compelling that people want to buy into it.
It's also because of their themes, because of how bright, I've known Matt a long time. I'm an acquaintance with Trey. But I'll say, Matt, you're so brilliant. He goes, no. Trey's the genius. I just do some stuff. He's like,
They really do have that relationship. And it's not true. The two really need each other to function. And I've been blessed enough to be in that writer's room for South Park a number of times. And it really is just this well-oiled machine. But these are two guys who are, in a way, have been grandfathered into being able to do the kind of sizzling satire that a lot of people couldn't necessarily get away with nowadays.
I don't think anybody could. And that's why people would get upset with me when my stand-up was called filthy. But I was just trying to make people laugh. And I was like that before I was on Full House, playing a character. That is part of who I am also. But it's, I find it a great way to get attention, just because it's not getting attention. It's bringing more people in that wouldn't be brought in, and people that are scared of the morals of society or language or subject matter that would be offensive. If you really are as smart as them and know how to put it together, and South Park was always, what have we learned today? You know, so you're watching these kids who you love, and they're about as two-dimensional as you can be. They're color forms, basically. And you know them and you love them. And then they're doing these horrible things, you know, satellite in your ass and in your anus and, you know, everything. Devil in bed with Saddam Hussein in the movie and Book of Mormon. I thought when it was over, I went, Mormons aren't going to be upset at this, I don't think.
No, they promoted the church in our playbill.
And that's beatific to me. That's when comedy goes to a higher place.
Yeah.
And what you did in that play, what you both did, Andrew is
he's
another
incredible
force to be reckoned with. And he's after incredible. It was over, I remember us hugging each other. So it must have been in New York. And Norman was sitting right behind me. And I said, did you have any consulting on this? He goes, God, I wish I did. Because I said, this is my second time, and I think it was his as well. But I talked to you for a while, and I talked to Casey. I went out afterward. There was an outside shirt. You did no performances of this play in L.A.?
No, but I bet we met at the premiere, because I was at the premiere, and there was an after party. And that's where we all would have been there.
That's what it was.
Andrew and I were there. Casey was there.
Oh, that's what it was. I was at
and
the premiere.
I'm convinced that's where it was.
Holy shit.
Yeah, there was that whole outdoor party.
That was that good at the premiere.
That was my understudy. That was Jared Gertner, who did it in LA.
I didn't see him. I only saw you twice. And
he was phenomenal.
So I went again. And I don't know, that after party, because you guys came into the house.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So Andrew says, oh my God, I love you. He said, follow me on Instagram. And I said, oh, absolutely. And I followed him. And he said, I'm following you. And he looked at me and he went, we're friends now. And I went, okay. Anytime. And I haven't reached out, but I'll like
best.
His stuff. Oh, he's
the best. And it's so frustrating, because right before, literally the day before lockdown, the first time in February, Andrew was out here and we were workshopping something, because we were both sort of itching. It's been 10 years. It's been a decade. And we're both
I don't know what 10 years are.
No, it's
one day you'll be like me.
It's crazy. But he did, but it goes like that. It really does. And it has been 10 years since we did Book of Mormon. It will be 10 years this year.
Which changed your whole life because you met met everyone that exists in show business.
Yeah, it was crazy. It really was like a rock concert. And we were gearing up to sort of, we were thinking about taking something out next year and doing it in New York. And I miss that. I really do miss the stage so much. And I pray that once this whole thing is over, I get to go back. I miss that. And I also am like envious because you really got, even though it's not a stage show, the sort of four camera sitcom style is the closest thing to what you get from being on stage. I feel like it's that shared communion with an audience that is so, I think, intoxicating.
I would do it again if it was the right thing. I've done a bunch of them besides Full House. I've done a lot of them. And there is something about it. It's a proscenium. You're playing to the audience. You have to wait for laughs, which is not a conversation in a kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
But something also wonderful about single camera too. There's something beautiful about being able to just be.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
And be able to run it so many times so you try to get the best you can out of yourself.
But it's funny, Bob. I have a theory because this was around the time I was doing Back to You. And our live performances in front of the audience were killer. And I remember being like, oh my God, this show's going to run for years. And then I remember seeing the episodes and I frankly was like, eesh. And it was one of the first sitcoms that was shot and aired in high definition. And there is something about that aesthetic that I think ruined that format.
I agree.
Right? Like there's
something.
You
shoot it on film, like Mary Tyler Moore Show, or you shoot it on analog video.
That's it.
That's why Full House did what it did. Yes, it had the themes. Yes, single parent affected a lot of people. Yes, the fantasy of three guys and a rock and roll star raising three little blonde girls that don't look like their dad. And then the amazing thing is it hits the optic nerve different. Video literally hits the optic nerve completely different than digital, which is why for camera, it doesn't have that brightness to it. There's nothing, you can't light it to give it that look.
I agree. And I do think that something was lost with regard to the four camera sitcom when it went HD 4K, because that aesthetic doesn't allow you to feel like there's almost an, it's our world, but there's like, I don't know. There's a quality about it that feels like it's presented in a different way that makes you embrace it.
It's glossier. It's just glossier.
Yeah. So I really miss live theater and that experience for me put me on the map and it gave me an opportunity to drive my own destiny as opposed to sort of prior to that I was getting cast as like the funny best friend and I just was unsatisfied creatively.
Right. Well, I have to ask you one more question about this show. Was there ever talk of a movie? A Book of Mormon.
And oh, yeah, so
why
still is.
Why not? Why can't we have it? Why can't you and Andrew?
I think it's a question for Trey and Matt. You know, they definitely have talked about it multiple times. Now more than ever with the success of Hamilton, it sort of is a no-brainer. But I don't know that Andrew and I could get away with playing 18-year-olds.
I don't think it matters. I mean,
sure, to a certain extent, I guess it doesn't. But you know, at the same time,
and if you've seen Pen 15,
oh my God, Pen 15 is so unbelievable.
Well, what's the big deal?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think inevitably they will do it. I think Trey and Matt don't like looking backwards; they like looking forwards. And so, like, I would guess for them, it's been a matter of why, like creatively, why?
Right.
They certainly don't need the money. Then, I think it's about like what is going to satisfy our creative impulse right now. And frankly, South Park still gives them everything they need in terms of just that.
But Book of Mormon is a gift to the world also. So is South Park. I mean, you know. But let me get off of it because I'm not going to get my dream right now.
I can tell you this. There has been conversation, and I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years there's a Book of Mormon movie. Put it that way.
If Mike Nichols was alive, he would make it.
Oh, God. How great would that be? How great would that
be? He was so sweet to me one night. I went to see a play. I was in...
Death of a Salesman?
No. It was Aaron Sorkin's play. And Mike was just there with Diane Sawyer. And it was a Monday night, and it was, you know, one of those critics' nights. And it was Aaron Sorkin's play, and it was really good. And I'm sitting there and exhausted. I think I was in the middle of, put in on drowsy. So I was in the middle of those 12-hour days, and right. I'm about to hit the boards. And I don't know what the hell I'm going to be. 1,800 people in a theater. I don't know what I'm going to do. That was fucking scary. But I'm sitting there, and I went, oh, something's happening. Because when the theater community accepts you, something's going on. It's not just a snob fest. It's a talent thing. And it's an acceptance into the club you want to be in, really. I mean, it's not that I want to be in a club. I'm like Groucho, you know, you want to get into. I mean, I want to talk to you about Murder on the Orient Express, because that's a club moment. That's like not a club moment. It's an ensemble collaborative festival of greatness.
It was so thrilling. I mean, that was so thrilling because it was half that cast they were who we studied in college when we were studying Shakespeare, you know, whether it was Branagh, yeah. Whether it was Derek Jacobi, whether it was Judi Dench. That was our breeding ground for education in everything. So it was surreal. And then on top of that, to have Michelle Pfeiffer and it was like Academy Award winner after Academy Award.
And your boss, Johnny Depp, you're his assistant. How was it working with him? It must have been great.
He was lovely to me. I mean, he really was. Obviously he's going through a lot of stuff right now, and I can't speak to that because I just don't have any information on it, but I can tell you he was lovely on set. Yeah, he was lovely to me.
Well, you're so great in it, and it makes me so happy because you're such a good actor, you know. Maybe you don't, but you are.
I don't think so, but I appreciate you.
This is my self-involved story, and I'm going right back to Murder on the Orient Express because I watched it three times. So I think it's everything you're in. Frozen I saw once because I already got my nut on it, but you know, she's hot. What are you going to do? And you're Olaf. I mean, how do you not live for that? And sequels and all kinds of great stuff. So, and you don't get back end on Disney. That's just the nature.
Nope.
But this is what happened to me just to finish that Aaron Sorkin story that was going nowhere. I'm about to do Drowsy. And this goes back to you being a really good actor, really good. And I'm sitting there, and Aaron Sorkin's, the curtain is, the lights are starting to go down. His play's about to start. It's the night of critics. He comes over to me, runs over to me, and he goes, I'm so happy you're here. You're such a good actor. I went, what? Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. And he runs away. And I'm like, is he on mushrooms in the desert again? Remember when he did that?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he's so brilliant. I mean, he's Aaron brilliant. Sorkin, for God's sakes, right? So I'm like stunned. I'm like, oh, that's the nicest compliment. He must have not watched Full House or something. And then Mike Nichols comes over to me and says, you're a good actor. Within 6 minutes, right before
God.
Aaron Sorkin, Mike Nichols, with Diane, who I knew from having done a CBS show years ago, and he says, you know, you're a good actor, and I don't think you know it enough. You need to know it. You're a really good actor. And I felt like I had been anointed by, you know, the Pope or a higher power.
I mean, when the director of The Graduate in The Birdcage and Virginia Woolf comes up to you and says that, you frankly have, along with arguably or inarguably the greatest screenwriter slash playwright.
It was
living.
A good night, and I needed. It was weird. I was, you know, how hard it. Nobody wants to hear how hard it is when they work in three jobs to try to feed somebody. Right. But it is. You work hard to have the privilege to entertain people.
You do. Put it this way: it's the hardest of the acting jobs you can have. There's nothing to hide behind on stage,
right.
And it is. You are putting it all out there, and you're doing it 8 times a week. And you're laying it all on the line, and no, we are certainly not doctors, nurses, and we are the lowest on the totem pole in terms of having the most to be grateful for with the least amount to do.
Yes.
But it really is. It keeps you honest. Acting on stage keeps you honest, and it's why I think it's important that all of us go back and do it from time to time.
So that goes back to by my self-involved story. Of my kudos from Masters, a lot of people, you see the acting, you know it, and you see it, and you see, but in everything you do, there isn't. You're just there. You're supposed to do this. You've worked so hard to know how to do it. You have all the chops, but my God, in that movie, it was like, was that a definable? You've done so many things. I mean, you know, the Hugh Laurie series that you're doing. That's a new season just now, right?
I'm literally leaving for London in a few weeks, and we're gearing up to do season two of the show. And it's tremendous. Written by, of course, one of the greatest living writers alive, in Armando Iannucci, speaking of satirical geniuses. But no, Murder on the Orient Express was it was a turning point because it allowed audiences, I think, to see me in a dramatic capacity, which wasn't something.
And it wasn't a reach, and it wasn't a surprise for you, but
it was frankly what I was trained in. I wasn't trained as a comedian. I fell in love with comedy and therefore gravitated towards comedy. But 4 years of conservatory certainly did not train me for comedy. So it was really wonderful, and it allowed me to branch out and do things like Marshall with, you know, the incredible, Chadwick Boseman, who I miss every freaking day. And it's allowed me to frankly pursue opportunities I otherwise never would have had.
And how did that come about? Did Kenneth Branagh see you before?
Ken saw me in Book of Mormon. And I was, at the time, I was shooting Beauty and the Beast in London. Mm-hmm. And we had a general meeting together. And I sat down with him and we were talking. And I think I just, we hit it off. And we had this great, you know, great meeting. And then about 6-7 months later, I get a phone call. And, you know, it's working on this new adaptation of Murder on the Orient Express written by Michael Green. There's this role that I think you'd be perfect for. And it was a dream come true. And then, you know, a couple months later, he called me up and said, I'm working on this other thing called Artemis Fowl, and I would love for you to do it. And when Ken Branagh calls, you take it and you answer.
My God, what a talented man.
He's incredible. I love him today.
And he directs that and then plays Hercule Poirot.
Yes. And not only does he direct that and play Poirot, and not only is he producing it at the same time and doing, you know, revisions on the day, but he also was like an artistic director at a theater and starring in a show as he was doing it.
What?
Which is just so insane. I don't know how
is that? You can't do that.
It was crazy. I remember Daisy Ridley and I went to go see him in his show. And then the next day we all had like a table read. I was just like, this is bonkers. Who does this?
Oh my God. Well, that's his soul. So,
yep.
But that movie, and I watched a great video of an interview with you about how you addressed Dame Judi Dench.
Oh, yes.
Could you share that? Cause that's so funny. It's so funny and self-effacing.
So everybody, it was so funny because basically everybody was so unbelievably intimidated by her. And it was our first day in the trailer, and rightfully so, that it was our first day in the trailer. Leslie Odom Jr. was sitting there Daisy was sitting there, a couple of others. And she was just kind of, she had her eyes closed and her head back, and she was laying in her makeup chair. And I walk up to her, and after this like 10 minutes of just silence, I go, I lean in. She's got like a towel over her eyes, and I go, "Damn, Judi Dench." More like, "Damn, Judi Dench." And I just walk out, and she starts laughing so hard. And it, we just completely hit it off. I mean, there is just, there's something about the dame that is so dryly funny and wonderful. And she's just game for anything. She just, she loves to play. She loves to mess around.
Right.
So we became fast friends.
And I mean, everybody's in that movie and everybody seemed to love being in that movie.
Oh,
Michelle
yeah.
Pfeiffer was like,
oh, we all hit it off. I mean, we were frankly pissed off that they, you know, cast a bunch of new people for Death on the Nile.
Yeah, what is that? Why'd they do that?
Why, guys? Probably because it makes more sense because they're all playing different people.
Oh, yeah, but they're different people. But it's a company.
But there was early on that, you know, there was actually a discussion about the fact that, well, would it work to recast all of these guys in different roles? We did have that conversation, but I can't wait to see Death on the Nile. I'm a sucker for those Agatha Christie things. I think that they're wonderful.
It's, I remember the original one. I'm trying to remember who played Poirot. Do you know?
David Suchet. Or
no, I ate already. No, I'm not. I don't know. Was that French? No, I don't remember. No, there was another one that was.
Yeah, it was what's his name?
Famous
my brain
guy.
Is red. But what the good news is people can go on the internet now and look these things up.
Did you say who it was or no?
I thought it was David Suchet.
You might be right. I mean, we could both look it up.
Well, I'm going to look it up now because I have the ability.
Do you have the Citizen app?
No.
It's the funniest thing in the world. It's a thing that you look at your phone and it tells you what's wrong in your neighborhood. If there's a fire.
But I don't need that app.
It's a horrific thing that I have because
I have a real keen sense of what's wrong.
You can smell fire.
Yeah. Oh, Albert Finney.
It's Albert Finney.
It's Albert Finney.
I saw that because I was a huge fan of Albert Finney. And he was
God,
remarkable.
I love Albert Finney. One of the great voices.
Yeah.
Where is this deep? Kind of resonance down here. Almost towards the end, it was like very like. I remember seeing him in the third Bourne film, and it was just. But it was still.
It was like
so,
it was Tom Waits. It would just slowly decline
Waits,
from album
just,
to album.
It was just still like riveting to watch. I didn't need to understand him.
He did
I just
a musical
respected that he was brilliant.
I don't know how to say Leslie Bricusse's name. Is that how you
I
say it?
I feel like you just said it.
Okay. Well, it was called Scrooge, and he was Scrooge, and it's a musical. And I know the music from it today. I saw it as a kid. I can't get it out of my head. It's just,
really?
It was that good. And then near the elderly parts of his career, before these older parts in the Bourne movie, he did a thing called Under the Volcano that John Huston directed about a guy that drinks himself to death in Mexico. And he is, it is a just say no to alcohol. It is the most amazing 12-step program incentive thing I've ever seen. It's really hard to watch, and he was quite a genius. So,
oh, wow.
I'm so impressed now.
I didn't even know that there was a musical version of that.
Now, you're so... musical. You have such an affinity for it. You've got so many animated things that you are forever. I mean, you will work forever because you can sing, you can act, you love doing. Is it Frozen or Beauty and the Beast or what's your favorite? And you're doing a series that's animated, Central Park, right?
Well, I really Central Park is different for me because it's something I created. It's something that truly, you know, I'm a part of in every single facet. So it's just different for me. It's really exciting. It's really exciting to get to play in the wheelhouse of this thing that's really, frankly, never been attempted before, which is an animated series with four songs an episode. And each song we're setting out to be a hit song that propels the story forward, that propels the characters forward. So it right now, that is, for me, it's my baby. I'm so unbelievably proud of it.
Do you write the music?
I basically oversee the music side of things along with this incredible guy, Frank Chompy, and some other unbelievable folks, the Dacey brothers, and of course, Lauren Bouchard and Nora Smith, who created Bob's Burgers and are co-creators with me on this. And so we all sort of have a say in it, but the actual music writing comes down to the incredible composers and lyricists that we get. And we have these amazing girls, Kate and Elisa, who are just so freaking good. But also at the same time, we have incredible guest artists who come in, and like Cyndi Lauper, Sarah Bareilles, the list goes on and on. And it's just been a dream. It's just been a true dream.
Are you done with that right now?
No, we're actually in the middle of finishing up season two. So,
but then you're going to London.
I'm going to London to shoot season two of Avenue 5 simultaneously.
Right.
We're going to keep, we're done with the writing. We're done with the early production stuff. So now it's just everything is being colored and everything is being mixed.
So if there's anything, because it's your show, there's stuff that you can do when you're in London.
Totally. That's what you'll be doing. I can keep working in London on it. And you know, I've already recorded all my stuff. And you know, the one good thing I will say about animation in times of COVID is it's much easier than probably anything else in our industry. Because all I need is this thing right here, right?
Yeah,
And we send all of our actors and singers mics and recording equipment and it just works. Is it preferable to a studio? No, but it works. And we've had an amazingly blessed transition and our cast, you know, Stanley Tucci, David Diggs, Leslie Odom Jr., Catherine Hahn, Emmy Raver-Lampman, like our cast is just insane, and they've all been so game even through this, so it's been great.
Well, I want to talk to you about just life in general, because and praise you more, but we're gonna take one more break because I love talking to you a lot, so we'll be right back. Okay, we are back. It's exhausting. These breaks are so exhausting.
These breaks, really, that one took a really long time.
Oof.
I'm lethargic now because that lulled me to...
I'm sorry.
That lulled me to want to groom and spend money.
Yeah, spend money and possibly there's edibles I think they sell.
Yeah.
Or yes. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of stuff. Mattresses, a lot of mattresses.
Mattresses.
Yeah, yeah. They'll design it right to your body.
By the way,
form.
Edibles and mattresses. Great fit. If you're gonna do a 1-2, if you're gonna do a 1-2 Amazon punch,
I think adult diapers go with that because you're not gonna get up if you eat edibles.
Yeah, that's true. That's
I'm not an edible guy. I did it years ago and it just I can't get up.
Edibles make me really uncomfortable in my skin.
Yeah, it's like
my skin makes me uncomfortable in my skin. So adding edibles into the mix really it just takes it to a level that I think is unhealthy.
Do you find right now, because this is 2020 is over, you know, but we've squeaked out of it is how I'm approaching this. It's been horrible and it's been symptomatic of, I mean, it really, nobody wants to look at things this way, but I do, that all of it feeds itself, all the negativity, all of the hate, all the
disinformation.
Yeah, misinformation, and you're very wonderful. You know, you're always doing amazing charity work with all of the readings you did. You just did the Wayne's World.
Reunited Apart. Yeah. It's been...
Who did that benefit? That was a children's food?
Well, yeah, that was children's first responders. And you know, the whole Reunited Apart really came out of my desire to... to help people at a time in which they desperately need the assistance, but also to just make people smile, Bob. Like, I was so, when I started it in April, I just felt like we were lacking opportunities to not be anxious. And there was something to me about seeing some familiar favorites brought back together again that really made me smile. Mm-hmm. And it's the joy of just reuniting people who haven't seen each other in years too. And it really just connected with people. And it's, you know, it's given me some sanity in these insane times.
Yeah. I've been very busy doing as much as I can. The podcast is fun because I get to connect, but also working on a bunch of projects and developing, and I'm doing some TV show tomorrow.
So, are you? What are you doing?
One of those ABC game things that, you know, the comedians do when it's either me or Joel McHale. You just plug us in the seat, you know. Oh, who's going to be the witty tall guy? So do you want the younger, handsomer, more, I don't know, Danish looking model? Or do you want the man that he's a Jew model? So I'm the question mark. So I'm doing that.
Time for more America's Funniest Home Videos as well.
Well, actually, we did a dirty version. We shot 14 of them.
Really?
Yeah. It's called Videos After Dark, and they're shot. And what happened was ABC couldn't air them because they were too dirty. It's a bunch of babies saying fuck.
Could you ever go back and do the original again or no?
No. But, and I was asked over the years, but that was good. That when, you know, I had my time. But I went back to Full House with Fuller House. So as Sean Connery said,
which I can't wait to watch once we're done with Full House.
Well, it has nice memories, you know, and it's amazing. Netflix gave it 6 years and the girls are great.
It's incredible.
And John, Dave and Lori and I, we just come back as, you know, they call us the legacy cast. It's like on the alien vessel when Sigourney Weaver opens the chamber and smoke comes out. It's like, I'm ready for my lines.
Did the Olsons ever come back?
No.
They didn't
want to. And they should do what they want, you know.
Yeah,
that was like always everybody's going, they need to do this. They owe us this.
They don't need to do anything.
Well, they want to,
you know what's incredible?
They don't want to act.
I got to tell you, going back and revisiting that show, not being a kid and watching it as an adult now, my God, they were special children.
Amazing.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's the comic timing of a child it's really hard because they don't. I mean, they don't know comic beats, right? They don't know that rhythm yet, and they were both just naturally gifted.
But they were born into it, and they had the bandwidth in their brain to be able to do it. So they were unusual. 9 months old, I changed their diapers, and that's real. And I'm close with them. I mean, I'm probably the one that stayed the closest because I love them. And they would come over, my daughters, and, at my house, and my oldest daughter, she's 1 year younger than them. So I have videos of them in little puffy sleeve dresses when they're three at my house. And so there was a fatherly thing going on, but we're friends, you know. Like, we're out of touch right now because a lot of people are.
Right.
But they're really, a lot of times it would be cutaways. You know, I don't know, I'm nuts. And then other times you'd watch a full-on take. And then as they got older, they would just pick up all their cues and you didn't need the cutaways. It was actual acting.
Do you know what blew my mind? So we're watching an episode last night, as you're shocked to hear. We watch it every night.
I don't watch it.
And I'm watching this young actress who is Michelle's friend. And I'm like, oh my God, this kid's a star. What happened to this kid?
Journey.
And then I look her up and it's Journey Smollett.
Journey.
I'm like, are you kidding me? What?
It
was so incredible.
Journey. Is it Journey?
Journey?
I don't know. I called her Journey, which was
okay,
a kid.
Okay, could be Journey.
She's so great on that show.
God. She is so talented.
She's this beautiful, great actress.
Yes. But even back then, just like star power.
Yeah.
Star power.
Oh, nailed every line. I didn't. All the kids nailed their lines. I didn't. I had Jody Sweetin and Candace Cameron feeding me my lines. And then literally, before it went off the air, Ashley and Mary-Kate gave me all my lines.
Oh, my
God. And I had to walk in a room and go, what's going on? I couldn't remember that.
You
know
that. I would
write it on a pencil.
Do you know that the big, so when I was going to school, elementary, high school, the big alum who graduated from our school was Scott Weinger.
Oh, he's a dear friend.
Yes. So Scott.
Then he went to Harvard.
Scott went to Harvard, and around the time that, you know, he had just done Aladdin in 92 or 93 and Full House, and he was the biggest star from my high school. And that was it. Like, that was like, everybody wanted to be him. We all wanted to grow up to be him. But yeah, he was the big one who left our school at the time.
He's a sweetheart.
He's
used
great.
To, yeah, I got him drunk when he was 17. I'm not proud of that. It was safe, though. He wasn't driving. I was. All the stories are true. But I never got canceled because I just was safe and loved people. So.
Oh, my God.
So you are like me. We care about what we're going to move toward. And I don't like... And I feel really bad that people feel like their voices aren't heard and that people are believing things that aren't fact.
Right.
I used to have a joke. The joke was men can breastfeed. I read that. Okay. I wrote it down and then I read it. So basically what we're doing as a society is writing stuff down, or someone told me that's it. You don't even need... That's how we've lived for the past 4 years, that someone told someone or they watched it on the news and they're running the country. And that's not, I can't get my news from that. I don't know how to get it.
No, I couldn't agree more. Around 5 or 6 years ago, I was randomly asked to write op-ed pieces for USA Today. And I thought it would be just a really fun exercise. Well, one of the pieces that I wrote was actually about social media. And I remember at the time I had a really keen fear that where social media was headed is that everybody would consider themselves an armchair expert.
Absolutely.
And everybody would start to assume that because they had a platform, it would make them as entitled to say things based on fact or fiction as people who were more qualified to say them. And frankly, that fear has not only become self-actualized, it really, especially in a time of COVID in which we're all on our devices nonstop, I think it has been worse than anybody could have imagined.
Yeah.
And the truth is I don't know how we get out of it. I don't know.
It feels like the barrel of pickles has been poisoned.
Yeah, it has. And
deli.
And it's terrifying because it's like, how do you get back to critical thinking in mass?
How do you do people go, well, I'm not going to reach across the aisle if this is what, guys, this is, you know, I'm from Philly. I've been in Independence Hall. I've been upstairs, which is the room where it happened. So upstairs in Independence Hall, I just went by with my wife, Kelly, and I was in Philly for one night to do a gig, and I showed up there and the Rangers said, oh, Bob, come on in, you know, Philly boy, and you're Bob. So that's the only nice part of people thinking you're safe and not a predator or trying to steal, you know, I don't know, the Declaration of Independence. They have a shitty copy of it there. But upstairs, and I've talked to people about this that know about it. I mean, Norman Lear had a copy of the Declaration of Independence, and
oh,
now
God,
it's on tour. I don't know where it's going to go because apparently they're going to rewrite it. But there's strike throughs on a lot of it, but I went upstairs and they were drunk. Those guys worked all night long and they argued and they had fights. They
yep.
beat the hell out of each other.
Yep.
And these are the guys, this is Hamilton guys.
Yep.
But they got through it. They got through it to the point where they established the Union of the United States, and then the Civil War happened, and that's the biggest fear are those people that feel disenfranchised and feel that lies were told to them and that somebody can push a button and erase votes because he says they can and said they can. It's just very unfortunate.
It's a very dangerous moment. I still believe...
And we can't live in fear. That's the other thing. So
you can't live in fear.
There's the exercise.
And I still believe in... I still believe in the promise of what this country can be.
Me
and
too.
I still believe that we will at some point find our better angels again. And I still believe that it's always darkest before the dawn, right? Like I think that we are at a real dark inflection point. And unfortunately I think that people are taking advantage of an opportunity to really exploit their own self-interest based on propagating disinformation. And I don't blame people for you know, voting however they want to vote.
Me either.
What really worries me, though, is I don't think that they know they're voting against their own self-interest in some respects, you know?
Yeah, because the person didn't have their self-interest.
Exactly. And that's a tough part is... You know, it's great that this guy wants to keep, you know, he wants to win at all costs, but I don't see him doing anything to actually help the country right now as we are going through the worst crisis I've ever witnessed in my life.
Yeah.
You know, this pandemic
has no
guide.
And some people say the 100 years, you know.
This pandemic has no national response to it. It is such a damning indictment of leadership right now that nobody... is steering this ship. It's a rudderless ship, and everywhere you look, somebody knows somebody who has been drastically and dangerously affected by this virus.
Well, hopefully we are a week or two away from this release of this podcast to starting to try to rectify a lot of things and take care of the people. Because there were people, when the polio vaccine came out, that didn't take it.
And, of course.
And they got polio. And some didn't get it. And some died. And people got polio. People really got polio. That's what people don't understand. Polio existed. My cousin had it. You know, so denying. And people that have coronavirus. A friend of my wife's had it. And a couple days were bad. And then she's fine. That's how her body reacted. And then another friend of mine. A dear friend, you know him, Danny Burstyn.
Oh, my God. That was so upsetting because Danny was really badly affected.
Really badly. And yeah. I was in contact with him, and his life's very difficult right now. And his beautiful wife, Rebecca, with ALS, and she's such a hero and such a beautiful, wonderful
And basically,
woman.
Like, dragged him to the hospital.
They did. And
yeah.
Then they wanted to put him on a respirator, and they didn't have remdesivir or whatever Greek god would have helped him. But he is an amazing soul and also incredibly talented. But talent doesn't help you when you're on a respirator.
Nope.
So, but that's what we have to do is, and what you're doing, what you do is make people feel better.
I try. I don't know if I always succeed, but I certainly try.
Well, but the try is the whole thing. Although Yoda said there is no try, only do. But how can you listen to a guy with so much ear hair and he looks like rotted cheese? So, I watched Mandalorian. Have you watched it?
I love Mandalorian. I think it is so phenomenal. That last episode with Ahsoka Tano is just, it's so good.
I haven't seen it. I just watched the first one and, I was a little concerned over Mandalorian doesn't have much of a personality. So I was worried about him. Does he break into song later on? And Baby Yoda, I want to breastfeed that thing.
It's the most perfectly designed. You know what's so funny about it? I was actually on the set of Mandalorian season one. My friend Bryce Dallas Howard was directing an episode.
Right.
And I got to see, I got to actually see Baby Yoda before anyone knew Baby Yoda existed.
Oh my God.
And it was the hardest damn thing in the world for the next 6 months to not say a word about the existence of this.
Oh my God.
Thing. Yeah.
That's like having the vaccine and not being able to tell anybody.
Nah, it was rough. It was rough.
How big is it? Is it like a six
inch?
Oh no,
he's little. He really is like, he's this tiny little puppet, and it's just the most incredible. It's the most incredible thing you've ever seen. It just really is so lifelike and impressive.
Is it Henson's company?
I don't know. I mean, I would imagine so, right? But I don't
think so. It would make all the sense in the world.
It would. Disney they designed the first one, right? They designed Yoda.
And it's Frank Oz was...
incredible Frank Oz.
Miss Piggy and Yoda. I mean, come on.
And a great director.
Oh, such a sweetheart. So I have to ask you about this because it brings up Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So, right. So now that is shot?
No, we were supposed to shoot in the spring and then this pandemic happened.
I'm sorry, the pandemic, I'm not familiar.
I suddenly just turned brain dead.
So you haven't shot it and it's with Rick?
It's with Rick coming back and Joe Johnston.
Does it open with you beating him up at an ATM?
No, we decided that that's already been done. It feels like it would be redundant at this point. That was so crazy.
That's so terrible.
I was so viscerally angry when that happened.
I mean, of all the people in the world.
No, you do not. I'm going to use my one F-bomb. You do not fuck with a treasure, a national treasure like Rick Moranis.
He's someone you just want to hug.
Hug, yeah.
Because look... First thing, look at how many, nobody even realized until that moment how much joy he's brought to so many people and how many movies he's made.
Yep.
I mean, just one or two of them. I mean, Ghostbusters and Little Shop of Horrors
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Ghostbusters, Little Shop of Horrors. He had a run that was Parenthood that was just insane.
Didn't want to do it for personal reasons and... You know, God bless him for that. You know, and I wanted him for something I was doing, and I reached out through his lawyer, and he was so touched that I had reached out, and he said, "No, I just don't. I'm just not wanting to do it." But this is a wonderful thing.
It took a year or two of nonstop harassment, and begging and pleading because I'm part of the generation that was so inspired by Rick's performances and his movies and his legacy. So I feel blessed that he said yes. And I think it's, the script is very much a sequel and very much an incredible reminder of the greatness of Rick Moranis and a celebration of a movie that, certainly my generation holds as a classic.
Who do you play in it?
I play his son, his grown-up son, Nick Zielinski.
Does he shrink you? Don't tell me. I don't want to know.
I can't ruin that part of it.
Who's
directing shrinking
it?
Involved.
I would do an R-rated version.
I knew when it left my mouth where it was going and I couldn't
stop
it.
Honey, I shrunk your, and then anything you want to be.
And then fill in the blank. And then it's really... Yeah. It's like a game of Mad Libs for the audience.
Yes, and Andrew Dice Clay has all the answers. So when is that scheduled to be able to be done, providing by middle of the year?
I think we're hoping to shoot it in the spring or early summer now.
That's fantastic. Is there anything else we can look forward to? Because I've gone through pages and pages of you and you, all about you. And
no, there. You know what?
Anything else beloved that you'd like to mention?
We're getting up to have a really exciting year. There's a bunch of stuff on the horizon, none of which I can talk about yet. But I think it's going to be a really exciting year and. You know, I'm just excited to get back to some form of normal soon. You know, it's time.
And you're very compassionate and you're very empathetic. Do you get a lot of, because of that, and you put out your heart and how you feel, do you get a lot of slap back on Twitter and do you get beat up? Do you?
Sure.
Do you block? Do you mute?
I don't, do I care?
Do you care? Do you leave the voices on there, or if someone's quite evil, do you?
Well, if someone's quite evil, I report them for being quite evil, but I don't really give a shit. Like, right. It's not, if you're that unhappy, that's not my problem. You got to figure that out for yourself.
Some guy attacked me today, and he's got a lot of, I don't know, like 50,000 people. I looked it up because George Carlin I regarded very highly, and this guy has a George Carlin tribute thing where he does quotes from George and videos of George, and comedians I know follow this person, and I was following, and I put out something that was, I was talking to a friend of mine and just saying, you know, we've got to be here for our neighbor. We have to not get mad at them for their beliefs. And it was just something that people look at as Hollywood bullshit, which is just bullshit because I'm not Hollywood. You know, I'm just not that person. And this one guy said, you know, you're naive, Bob, and George Carlin would think this and that and this and that. And he just berated me. He said, get real or something. And at one moment I wanted to answer him saying, I knew George Carlin.
Right.
And if I had said this peace, love, and understanding type thing to him, George would have said to me, I wish it was like that, Bob, but I don't see it that way.
Right.
But he wouldn't yell at me, and he wouldn't berate me for my opinion. And he loved being around someone that would try to shine some light. He didn't, if he liked them, he wouldn't, he would listen. You know, he wouldn't just go, fuck you. You know, we're all fucked. You know, he says great stuff. You know, George, now you can, you know, he, it's lives right now. You know, people are, he talked about abortion, and he goes, you know, people care about you before you're born, but after you're born, fuck you. And that's like, I can't argue with that, because what happens to all the babies that nobody cares about? They're just, you know.
But George was definitely, I mean, even at the time, he was pushing the boundaries, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, I feel like right now we're very blessed to live in an era that gave us Chappelle, and there's somebody who continues to just be fearless in the face of a public that is definitely, you know, either along for the ride or not. But I really respect the hell out of him, because I think he knows he's making you uncomfortable. And I think that great comedians do that. They ride that really well, right?
He's one of the best. Really, I got to do comedy camp in Ohio. Dave wanted me there.
Oh, with Dave?
Yeah, I was there with Louis C.K. and Chris Tucker and...
And Sarah.
No, Sarah wasn't there at the time I was there, but Michelle Wolf was, and Darnell, and Mo, and there are people now that he's... doing it again. He's going to be doing it in January, February, and I think I'm going to go, because if he wants me to go, I want to do it. It's wonderful, because I love him so much. I've known him a long time, and he's just the real deal. He's always Dave.
Yeah.
And he works hard at it, you know?
Oh, yeah. And he's just like, and he can find comedy in anything. His recent SNL was just, I felt, spectacular.
It was, and Bill Burr is a friend. And
I love Bill Burr so much.
Bill also, and he's got a great animated show, F is for Family.
Oh,
and
he's so
and
good.
He's a friend. He's been on here, and he, on here, like I have a network, which I never want. But he just berated me for 40 minutes, and he said, you know what your act is, Saget? Your act is just, you know, you're doing lines from Full House and saying fuck every 5 minutes. That's all your act is. And then, so I'm like, okay, all right. So then, and then we're friends. And he was over here and we were smoking cigars,
six weeks ago.
And I did a drive-in. I think I did a drive-in. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I did it, but when we're recording this. But he said, do a drive-in. He said, I did it. Instead of getting heckled, the lady just drove away. Because I got to perform. I have to. And you're going to get to do so much now. You're going to go off and make so much stuff.
I'm excited to get back to it. I really am. I think it's going to be harrowing, but exciting.
Hey, if you got to do heroin, you know, that's all part of it. Oh, you said harrowing. Well, I thought you said, I think it's going to be heroin.
You're a sick man. I
think it's
going to
be LSD. But I'm sorry, Bob. What were you saying? You just kind of drift off because you've been here so long. Are you? Last question is, you're not last. I have to know how babies are born. But are you taking your family with you to England?
No, it's you know what? Without the vaccine right now, it doesn't feel like the time to do that.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to wait a little bit.
I agree.
And see how things play out. And it's going to suck to be away, but...
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see. It's all changing day to day.
Everything is changing. Everything that we're upset about, we don't even know at the time of this coming out what has happened.
Exactly.
Well, Josh, I just adore
you. I love
you,
my friend.
I love you.
You are one of the greats. And honest to God,
will you say that again? Because I need a good soundbite.
Bob Saget is one of the greatest anything ever, and you will respect him at all costs. I adore
you. Can you call me a stud muffin?
You are. You're a stud muffin. I don't even know why I need to say it out loud. It's just understood.
The sad part is it's because my penis is shaped like a muffin. It's so sad. It's like, I don't know if you know the word chode. I don't want to take it to that place because I want your kids to be able to hear this. But yeah, Dad, Danny Tanner says bad things.
Olaf and Danny Tanner say filthy things together.
Olaf is amazing.
Oh, I love you.
Oh, God. You're so great. I hate this part. This is where people go, fuck them, Hollywood bullshit. Why don't we sing Imagine now?
Imagine this. I genuinely can't wait to actually get together with you and smoke cigars and have a drink.
You smoke cigars?
I do.
Oh, let's do this. Let's do this. And I have a heart lung machine at the house right after I smoke.
Yeah, that's great. You just kill two birds with one stone, or kill ourselves.
I look forward to it. I look forward to hanging with you. And what's your wife's name?
Ida.
Ida, that's a pretty name.
She's rad. She's getting me through this hellscape right now.
Yeah, this has been, I think it will be positive because, you know, all the cliches, whatever doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. But we have had a time, people have gone out of their minds because they haven't been able to leave. And then those that did got sick and got persecuted for, you know, so people have made science political and all this horribleness because we've been in a horrible pandemic. And people don't understand it or want to. And I get that because I wish it wasn't here either. But I just wish you and your family a lot of health and stuff.
I love you, my friend. You too. Let's get together soon. And thank you for having me on. You're the greatest.
Thank you, Josh. Happy New Year and safe travels.
Happy New Year. Bye. Bye, my friend.
Well, I enjoyed the hell out of that. I hope you did. I hope it wasn't too actor self-involved. I do talk about myself too much. And it's not good when I have a guest like Josh who has so much to say and so open to play. And I just love the guy. And I say that at the end of every episode, almost, unless it's a lady, I would say I just love her. But in this case, I would say I just love the guy. We could use the same outro for every episode. I don't think so. Anyway, Josh Gad, you're going to want to be seeing all of the stuff he's doing, all the new stuff he's doing. He's just a sweetheart, and I don't know, I can't really lick him up and down anymore because I love the damn guy. So do what you do, you know, you rate, review, you subscribe, you follow, you listen to this podcast, subscribe. That's the important thing, is to subscribe, download, listen, stream and gleam and cream. What? No, stop it, Bob. Not after that. I hope New Year's was good for you. Here we go into 2021. I've got a lot of great guests coming up, and I'm excited to spend 2021 with you, and I'm going to be out there touring this year because we're all going to be able to get back to some kind of life, and I'll be able to entertain you guys, getting out and seeing you up close, which I would really, really love. I wish you all a lot of good health and a lot of safety, and thank you for listening. And I'll talk to you next time. Hang in there. This year is going to get much, much better. and more people will, I think, come to a sense of calm and moving forward. That's my, dare I say, prayer for the world and for our country, the United States. And that's it. Lots of love. Talk to you later.